हेलो
हाय हाय यू आर डूइंग वेरी वेल गुड टू सी यू
हेलो
अंशु Sincere apologies.
I got your card.
Yeah. I think you met him.
Shiva
Sivao.
Yes, I did.
It's been a while.
Pre-COVID, right?
Correct.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How about you? All well?
All well.
I'm sure you want some coffee tea.
I don't mind a cup of tea, Rivaka, please.
Plain tea?
Masala chai will do, thanks. So, if I recall right, we were at that time looking to focus on exports.
Yes.
and enhance our value addition as a result. Where are we in that? I'm sorry, I've not really followed the company too closely. I just want some understanding of how our plans panned out.
So, if you look at it, right, and I'm just got it graphed out. So I think when we met, we were probably looking back at FY19 numbers, perhaps. Mm. Right? So we've done about 90 crores or so export in FY19.
Right.
So FY22, what we just reported out, 220 crores.
Wow.
So we've, that strategy, whatever we were talking about, it's playing out. Right? And we've got good amount of new product launches happening this year, right? FY23.
Okay.
We will have. So we've got some new products that we have already been awarded, product samples have been made, testing in most cases is completed, it's just waiting for the launch date to kick in. Right. So one of those products is actually our first entry into the light vehicle segment in the North American market. So that's a component, about 20 kilo component that we're going to be supplying to our customer, American Axle, who's going to make the axle, and this is going to go on the Chevy Colorado series of trucks, which also I think includes the GMC Sierra trucks as well. So we're going to be supplying on all of those trucks. That rear differential carrier is going to be supplied by us, and that official start of production at the GM facilities in January. So, several months prior to that, we will be starting our production and our ramp up in the next few months.
And how does this work? I mean, the base business, that sustains at that level, depending on how the vehicle is accepted in the market. And then over and above that, you have to build new business, new products, or is it that existing products itself add to volumes?
So it's been a bit of both. If you look at that's a little more historically, right? This particular business is an 8-year business.
Okay.
So this business, whatever we've been contracted with, has a lifespan of 8 years. After 8 years, this will get phased out. The next generation will come in and take its place.
Okay.
Right? So we've got opportunity to win that next generation probably 2 years before that, 6 years from now or so.
Okay.
Right. And that's when that they'll start sourcing decisions on that one.
Okay.
So that's in this particular case. In other cases, what we've seen is a mix of two things happen in terms of how the growth has happened. Right? How have we gone from that 90 crore to 220 crore kind of a number? The two things that have impacted this is one, gaining share of business within existing customers. So in a lot of cases, when we were starting business for the first time with a customer, they'll give us a product. But they don't want to rely on a new supplier who they don't know very well for that product. So they gave us in a couple, actually both with Dana, who are Detroit Diesel, who are big customers today, they gave us 30% business of one product. And they said, here, this is your business. And as we proved ourselves capable of quality and delivery, right, they've kept increasing that.
Okay.
So the product that we launched in Dana US with in 2016, we launched it at 30% share of business. As of now, we have 100% share of business. So we're the sole supplier for that. Right. Similarly with Detroit Diesel in 2019, we launched this product. We were awarded a 30% share of business, but when we launched whatever the thing, we started off with 10, 15, 20, whatever, but we were contracted to be at 30. We are currently at 50 and shortly moving to 70. They just approved us to go to 70. So this share of business increased. Right? So when all the business started off, it was a small piece of the pie, saying we got our foot in the door, got a small portion of, even within a certain product, the existing supply was already supplying, and we just got a small portion in just as a kind of a tryout, and then we basically displaced that existing supply, right? So with Dana, then the second product that they sourced from us, they sourced us at, you know, 80% share of business, kept 20% domestic. Those 80s have now had become 100s a few years ago. So we've been, and now when they're sourcing us new, on new product, they're sourcing us directly at 100. They feel that that perceived risk, whatever that they had, that they were concerned about earlier, is...
Because they've tested you and they've seen...
Yeah.
And I recall that at that time, our aim was to reach 30% of volumes to come from exports.
Revenue, yeah.
How are we placed on that?
So we've now gotten up to 24% for the last financial year. Okay.
And is there an incremental target? Are we like raising that target going forward?
So I think we've tried to get away now from percentage, and we're trying to move more towards in terms of absolute number, right? So if you look at last year, right, 220 crores is roughly about a 55 crores per quarter kind of a number is what we are. We believe with these launches, what we've got going on and new products, we should be able to get to about a 90-100 crore a quarter kind of an export by this end of the year. So
about a 400 crore
run rate.
Yeah, so I mean it may be towards the end of the year or whatever.
Right. Okay. So I think that's something that we see very much within the realm of possibility.
And that is because you have an order book which suggests this, or you have an order book?
I would say probably, you know, when we talk about 100 crore quarter, I can confidently say 85 is already in the bag, right, as an order book.
Okay. Thank you so much. 85 crore is in the bag. Okay.
Product developed, everything is done. We actually recently got a new product order as well, which goes on GM's electric delivery van.
Wow.
So this is, again, very, very, you know, short notice kind of a thing. They just gave us the order recently, and it goes into production by January, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I think FedEx has ordered some several thousand vans. They've already sold out their first year production. They haven't started production yet, right? They've already sold out. They start production in January, they've already sold out the first year of production in terms of volume. And then they're going to launch, so I think this is a 600 cubic inch, storage delivery van. They've got a 400 cubic feet delivery van that they're going to launch in 2024, which they believe will be have higher volumes.
And so that,
we're already in the sourcing discussion for that. We believe that order is imminent. We will likely win that order for certain products. So these in the pipeline, then every once in a while we'll get a sudden opportunity that comes, which seems to be a lot more, you know, short term kind of a thing, right? We've got some business we're working with Meritor in North America on, and we believe that we will win that business as well. So, and that potentially they want some products with getting into production by the end of the year as well. So that's why we feel that getting to that, 90 to 100 crore per quarter kind of thing is very much feasible.
So FY24 will be the year where we'll probably do 400 crore kind of a per year export.
Okay. That's what it looks like at this moment. Okay.
And of course, raw material cost has gone up. And at the time that we met, I think we were doing 125-130 rupees a kg realization. On exports particularly.
Yeah.
And that today stands where?
So whatever raw material increases are there have been passed through. And freight also, a big chunk of the freight increase also has been passed through.
Okay.
Some chunk of the freight increase is still under some discussion, negotiation going on. Some chunk is still in that bucket, but majority, whatever I think chunk of it has already been passed through. So I think there's pretty much that addition that's there, right? So export is what now at 180?
Yeah, 135 to 180.
175, 180.
So now our total average itself is 125 rupees.
125.
Yeah. Every domestic export, my average.
Okay. Okay.
So that time maybe it was about 90 rupees.
Domestic. Overall average, yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Okay. Got it.
So this and raw material, we've been able to pass it through into the market. Whatever that inflation has been there, it has been passed on to the customer. Only thing is, of course, it took a little bit of a hit on last year's P&L because of the lag. Right? So what so the mechanism is, we take this quarter's average raw material price, and that is fixed as your base for the next quarter.
Got it.
Right. So unfortunately, what happened in the last year is this delta average of this quarter and next quarter was so far apart that we were being passing through this number and we were, you know, kind of paying this number.
Yeah.
Right? And then the next quarter we thought, okay, you know, if it's stable, it'll be good. Then unfortunately, it went up again. And it was so substantial in the last year that it's definitely taken a hit into our P&L.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully, you know, we actually started to see Q4 in February, things were starting to stabilize. So a mild decline in raw material prices, and then suddenly, you know, our friend Putin decided to go into Ukraine, and that just made things haywire again in March. Of course, in the last couple of weeks, you know, with the announcements from the finance ministry coming through, you know, we're starting to see some decline in prices. We don't know what exactly it will be. I think everybody's still feeling out the market to see where it will end up. But suddenly it's going to decline, right? And hopefully this, you know, lag effect that you suffer with when it increases is something, is again a lag effect. When it comes down, you'll benefit. And we're seeing strong demand throughout, right? And so, which is honestly the reason why we're so able to pass through the raw material prices without too much difficulty.
Now, the other thing that one hears is that, and more so of late, after April, May, and the pronouncements from US Fed, is that US market is starting to weaken. And of course, you know, we are a drop in the ocean and there is a very big market to take. You can keep taking the market, you know, despite the market actually coming down, and keep growing. How do we look at this? That if the market stagnates or comes down, does it impact us in volume terms or not?
So, okay, so I think there's, I can play the, you know, the silver lining of everything, right? And then I'll play the silver lining first, and then I'll tell you what I think is, is the situation, right? The silver lining is, you know, when volumes are going down, when all of that, all the guys in purchasing are under much more pressure to show cost savings.
Mm-hmm.
So they have so their best opportunity to show cost savings is to
come to India,
to be able to resource products from our competitors, yeah, to us, which I believe we will be delivering a cost benefit, mm-hmm, to them. The second part of it is the other way around. When the market is increasing and the domestic guys are unable to ramp up and supply to those volumes, there's another opportunity there when, you know, where, for us to be able to come in because of, mm-hmm, you know, poor service, right?
Correct.
And it's not easy to go from 100 to 150 just like that, mm-hmm, right? Which can happen in the market. But again, so we've seen both of these opportunities. We've seen both of these opportunities play out in the last few years. So I just wanted to highlight, you know, what a silver lining is.
Typically,
in spite of ups and downs, we've still been able to, in the market, we've been able to grow. Now, but what I'll tell you what I think about the market and why I think so, right? If you look at, break it into two sections, right? One is Class 8. Right? If you look at Class 8, there's a chunk of what we do that goes into that Class 8 market. They have such a huge order backlog. Right, up until from September of last year, they have been throttling order intake based on production slots, based on availability of semiconductors and other supply chain issues that they've had. Plus, their order backlog is so high, even if there was no semiconductor issue, they still need a long period, almost a year to kind of work through that backlog.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so there is this backlog. So unless there's an incredible amount of cancellations, which I believe is very unlikely, right, I don't see that. Even if there is some slowdown in the market, at least this segment, with the amount of backlog of order intake that they've received in these last couple of years, I think the segment will do well, right? At least for the next two years, they've got such a huge order backlog that's there. The other part is on the light vehicle segment, which we're just entering, right? Obviously, it's new for us. So we're going to be supplying components that will go on the new Ford Super Duty, starting in January. So this component, again, is an axle differential carrier. The axle is assembled at Dana at their plant in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and they supply it to Ford Kentucky plant. They assemble the truck. I went to a dealership in Kentucky, not that far away from the Ford plant that actually manufactures it. I told the guy, I want to see one of these vehicles. Then, so when I wanted to go see that vehicle, he said, sorry, I don't have a model on the floor. I said, you have one in the lot I can go see. He said, no, I don't. I said, okay, what if I want to place an order for a vehicle? He says, I can't even take an order today because Ford has not released production slots because this thing. So I said, what about the guys who are getting orders now? When did they, getting their deliveries now, when did they place? He said, nine to 11 months ago, whoever is getting it, right? So there is a backlog of orders even for that. And let's keep in mind, the Ford Super Duty is the most profitable product that Ford sells, right? If they have such a backlog for this, what it means is, if they got semiconductors, they would prioritize this manufacturing over anything else, right? So in spite of that, this is the kind of backlog he has. I asked him about a couple other vehicles. He said, I can't place orders for those. One of which was the F-150 Lightning, which is the electric F-150. He said, on the day the vehicle launched, if you place the order, I would have taken it. The next day onwards, the system's locked.
Yeah.
They just got such a backlog already on one day they will see that they basically, Ford is not letting the dealer place an order for a vehicle. Now, I said, what can you give me? He said, I can give you a Ford Edge, I can give you a Ford Explorer. I said, okay, when can you give me the Explorer if I place an order? The guy says, 6 to 8 months. Right? So this is the kind of situation. Right? So when, there is talk about consumption, right? I mean, we saw target numbers come through and suddenly there was this fear that, consumption in the U.S. is coming down. We're hearing all these things, but when we hear about order backlogs of this extent, sure, if there are layoffs, maybe there'll be a few cancellations, some cancellations. When we talk about order backlogs of a year, really, I don't see, at least in the short to medium term, I don't really see in the next year or 2 years that there will really be a substantial impact or demand collapse that will happen to that extent, right? And today the labor shortage is such that if because of slowdown, whatever, if somebody loses a job, they're able to get the job also. There is every single store, whether it was a Target, restaurant, hotel, warehouse, every single place of business I went to had a help wanted sign, where hiring sign, whatever it is, right? There is a real shortage of workforce, right? And some of which we have benefited from because our customers who were dual sourced on some of the parts have converted to single source because they've told the other guy, listen, we're going to take this off your plate. You please perform better on the ones that are still on your plate, right? Because you're not able to meet what you need. So this situation, I don't know how it's going to play out. But with the amount of order backlogs that are there, I feel reasonably comfortable that at least, okay, next year or 2 years, at least for the calendar year 23, should remain fairly strong, right? I mean, how severely is the Fed going to react? What kind of impact is that going to have? I don't know. Right? And if you look at, the U.S. market, freight costs have gone up quite substantially also domestically, right? Trucking costs, I'm talking about. So that is also driving more in terms of, Class 8 demands and things like that. So between trucks, whether we're talking about heavy-duty trucks, I think there seems to be demand. I think on the light trucks also, the demand seems to be there with all this backlog. Now it's a question of, setting the supply chain in order and whittling away through this backlog, right?
And we've added to capacity?
So the last addition to capacity was in 2020, when we've added that bigger line.
Okay.
Right. So that bigger line is now giving us capability to do parts which earlier did not have the capability.
So we were doing 95,000 tons earlier.
Yeah.
In say 2018, maybe 19. Now how much are we doing, and what is the capacity?
So last year we actually did only 72,000 tons.
For obvious reasons.
I think this year that 95 number we will be exceeding. Our capacity is at 160,000. We believe we should be able to achieve about 80 odd percent of that. Capacity, right? So about 125-130. Not in the current year, but we think within the next year or two we should. The thing, depending on market recovery, I think exports seems to be doing quite strong, and that will also aid in that.
And these will be larger products, more complex from the new facility.
Yeah.
And the new facility is what, 50,000 tons?
60,000.
Yeah, 60 in total. There are two lines in that. One is a smaller line, producing smaller parts at a higher volume, higher speed kind of a thing. That is 18,000 tons. 42,000 tons is the bigger line. And that bigger line actually is capable of going up to 72,000. The line itself is designed and running to be running at 72,000. The furnaces that we've added only one set of furnaces. We just have to add one more set of furnaces and we can achieve it. So it's a slightly more modest investment. It's not a substantial investment for us to add another 30,000 over there.
Okay. And so that means that from 70 to whatever 140, 150 is the journey in the next 2-3 years, maybe.
So I think in the next couple of years, yeah, 70 to maybe about 120, 130, something like that is what we potentially see it at.
Okay. And what is the kind of EBITDA per ton that we make?
So EBITDA per ton, so last year if I look at the whole average, it was about 9 rupees, right?
Yeah.
It was 9 rupees per kg.
Okay.
So 9,000 rupees per ton was the EBITDA last year.
Right.
Unfortunately, as I mentioned, it was driven down by two things. Right. The two things that drove down this number were, one was, you know, some of these startup issues that are there in the new plant in the new line, right, because we had just commissioned it. So getting new products approved, so we've got to make samples, multiple listing, initial whatever teething problems that are there when you make samples. And these are all products we've never made before in our life, right? We never had the capacity to make a product that's 1.8 meters long.
Mm.
We never had the capacity to make a product that was 380 kgs heavy.
Mm.
Right? So these are all new. So there was some learning curve that we did go through last year. That was one. The second was this lag effect that I told you about, past the raw material prices. So that brought us down to that 9 rupee kind of a mark.
And what were we doing earlier, say prior to COVID, where had we peaked?
So I think about 10 rupees or so I think we were at, right?
Yeah. 1919 it was
11 rupees. So 11 is where we peaked.
Right.
And 1819 would have been an unusual year, I assume. You know, not a normal.
Volume itself, we touched about 90%.
Achha, okay. So for that reason, we were at...
So right now what we see this year, we think we can get it to a level that's probably around 12.
Really?
I think that's the level we can get to. In fact, if you look at Q4, I think Q4 was about 10.5, right?
10.48.
So Q4 was at about 10.48 or so. The main effect again is going to depend a little bit on this raw material price issue. But I think everything's been passed on, right? This thing. And now, hopefully with some drop in raw material prices, that's just started to happen. And everybody's still a little cautious in terms of trying to feel out the market to figure out, you know, where this is going to end up. Right? So nobody's trying to commit too much and then have to correct the, you know, lose money in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. So everybody's being a little cautious in reducing the price of scrap. So I think it will play out over the next couple of weeks and we'll figure out where that new equilibrium is. But undoubtedly there's a drop, right?
And the falling market helps us?
In raw material prices? Yes. Right?
Because of the lag. A lag in passing on your price to the, I mean, the reduction in your price to the customer. But there must also be a situation where you contracted your raw material ahead.
No, not really. No.
Okay.
So, see, the raw material that we are buying, majority of it is, most all of it actually is coming, steel scrap coming from traders.
Okay.
Right, so these are guys that buy from Hyundai, we buy from many other auto ancillaries, get them to their warehouses, bundle them,
right.
And then so that's a certain value add that they're doing,
okay.
And then ship them to us. And we've also got certain requirements, right? We can't take any scrap. We want, you know, we would prefer scrap that has, you know, lower manganese. We don't want scrap with any chromium in it. We don't want scrap with any nickel in it. These type of, we have certain requirements, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they might also do some segregation activities or something like that to do it. So there, it's almost a day-to-day market, right? So we can do a few tactical things. So Shivakumar may one day decide, I think the price is going to fall or something like that. He will, you know, decide not to buy for a few days because we have inventory that we can hold for a few days. But suddenly, if he feels that, okay, I got a great opportunity to really negotiate a better price with the supplier, you know, can pick up 3,000 tons in one go, right? And we got space to be able to store it and all of that. So it's really a dynamic game that we're trying to do a little bit tactically.
Mm.
But the reality is it's a spot market.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
So it's not
whatever price he was offered this morning, he will not be offered tomorrow, right?
Okay.
Maybe it's very
different. Okay. And our machined parts were about 60% of our volume. at that time, if I remember right, and of that majority was outsourced.
Correct. And the same, it's probably closer to 65-70 right now, the percentage. Majority is outsourced. I'd say probably 15% is done internally, and the remaining 85% is outsourced.
Why don't we add capacities for that?
So two reasons. I think one, we feel, you know, from a core competency standpoint, this is our core competency. We see, you know, great amount of runway. I mean, if we look at, you know, what it looks like, right, in terms of this year, we believe that there's a significant amount of growth that's going to be possible in this year and next, and with the kind of opportunities that we have in export, perhaps, you know, the next 5 years might look quite good. So one is as a core competence. Mm. Second is also as an area of focus in terms of both management focus and also investment, right? So for the kind of investment that we need to make, so one, I think for us to develop the kind of capabilities that we need to really be, you know, at the level of some of our suppliers who we work with, right? One of whom is Craftsman, recently listed company, and then there's a couple of others that we work with, right? So these, for us, it will take us a few years to get to their technical capabilities. We'll have to hire, we'll purchase machines. This happened to us a few years ago. We purchased machines for a specific project. Unfortunately, that was 2008, and that particular project just collapsed in 2008, right? And so we were stuck with these machines. We don't have any other business for them. In our molding lines, we have so many different products. If one business goes away, there's a whole bunch of other things we can occupy that space with, and it's very easy.
So
if I had in machining centers, if I had 200 machining centers, it's the same story, right? But when I start with one, so there's obviously some amount of initial pain, there's going to be some amount of capability building, all of this that needs money as well as management focus.
Mm.
So we believe that that's better served focusing on what we know how to do, which is casting, right? And we think that there's a huge amount of potential that we can unlock in the next 5 years or so. And then at that point, we'll have to look at, you know, what next, right? Is this what we want to do, or do we want to look at other materials, aluminum casting, steel casting, whatever else may be there, or you know, really we'll have to evaluate the market and, you know, what our opportunities are, right, and why we would take that opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Are we taking that opportunity as a counter cyclicality play towards our existing business?
Mm-hmm.
Are we taking that as something that we have already a huge customer base that we can leverage and grow very quickly and be able to do a better job? So that's really a decision that we will have to arrive at some point and talk about at some point. But what we see in this near future seems to be quite exciting in terms of growth. And so that's why we want to keep our focus and not take our eyes off that ball.
And who would be our key competitor? Kirloskar Ferrous?
Kirloskar would be one of them. But maybe if you look at the scale of the business, what we do, maybe about 20 or 30% of that business only would overlap with Kirloskar. A good chunk of what we do and majority of the growth that we're seeing is coming actually in ductile iron. Kirloskar doesn't do ductile iron. They do only gray iron.
What does ductile?
Ductile
iron. Okay.
So ductile iron, or SG iron as it's called, basically it's a slightly different process for manufacturing. It's the same metal. You melt it to a slightly higher temperature. There's certain alloying elements that are forbidden to use in ductile iron, which you can use in gray iron, like for example chromium tin and a few other things. But phosphorus and sulfur are very dangerous for ductile iron. But ductile iron gives you a strength that's about twice, double of what you get with gray iron. It's also more expensive. You're adding, the way that you create this additional strength, you're actually adding some magnesium into it. And what the magnesium does is it changes the shape of the carbon in that microstructure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So instead of carbon being there as kind of flakes, it's there as spheres. Mm-hmm. And that gives it that additional strength.
They have pig iron, right? So I assume that must be one of the reasons why they don't do ductile iron.
Right. So our pig iron used in ductile iron is generally much lower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't exceed 10% pig iron if we use it. As a material within our ductile iron.
Mm.
You know, I think they use something like 30% of their own pig iron into their gray iron.
Mm.
they also, a big chunk of what they do and, you know, where they focus is engine block and cylinder head, which we don't do.
Okay.
Right? So the big focus for us, ductile iron, they don't do. The big focus for them, which is the block and head, they don't do. There's a tractor housing piece that we both do.
Okay.
Right? And there's some competition that may be there in that. Specifically, I think mainly with Tata. Tata is our biggest customer, and they buy most of their heavy castings from us. Mahindra is their biggest customer, and they buy most of their heavy castings from them. So there's really
different product lines.
Slightly different thing.
And so who would be someone who you would say is similar?
Maybe Mahindra CI.
Mahindra CI.
They might have something like that. Otherwise, in most of the other cases, we're, you know, competing with a lot of local players, right? So when we supply to, let's say, Tata Motors in Jamshedpur, there's a lot of local Jamshedpur foundries that are, you know, supplying parts to Tata Motors, right, in that eastern region. You know, we supply to, let's say we're supplying to Tata, right? So Tata would be, I think, we're the largest, I think almost, 40% of their heavy casting spend comes to us. Right? And 60 is probably divided among three or four other players. And then Ashok Leyland, if we take, you know, we are supplying to them. They have their own captive foundry, and they're buying from the Coimbatore or Kolhapur area, a lot of smaller players in that region. So it's but when I look at kind of bigger players who we might, you know, compete with, and who I think are, you know, capable globally, right, to be able to meet the requirements of a global player as well. Handful, and I think Mahindra CI would probably be the one that comes to mind, because they do entirely ductile iron. But in terms of size of their casting business to us, I think they would probably be, you know, maybe somewhere about 2/3 of our size, or maybe their casting business, or maybe even less than that. I mean, if we do our capacity ramp up, they'll probably be less than half our size. If we look at what this year might turn out, if they use their capacities well and we use our capacities well, because our capacity is higher than them for sure.
Okay, so we are the largest in India
in ductile iron. And overall casting also between us, Kirloskar Ferrous, is pretty much overall numbers in terms of casting is very similar. I think they might be marginally higher than us in terms of how the last financial year ended up. They would have probably done slightly more tonnage than us. Potentially in a year or two, it will be, I think it could be different.
Yeah, and if I do a simple math, 160,000 tons and 125 average realization, we could be somewhere close to 1800 to 1900 crores revenue.
So let's take about 80% of that 160, right?
I'm saying that by then you'll have added new capacity also. So you know, say 3 years, 160,000 tons odd capacity,
125.
Yeah, so about 1800, 1900 crore kind of revenues, right?
Yeah.
And by then we'll have say 11 to 12 rupees EBITDA per ton.
12 plus,
right?
Okay. We'd like to, in the next 3-4 years, we'd like to get that to 15. But 12, we see this year that we should be able to push it.
So which means that, we are moving into a different orbit in terms of profitability. I mean, we've not had this kind of a profitability in the past.
Yes.
And that's all
we hope so, right? I mean,
touch wood, right?
I think that's yes.
And that's a function of how we've what kind of products, what makes utilization, all that, and scale, of course. Scale obviously benefits all that. Okay. And what is our employee strength today?
About 1,250.
So if I was to just do again a simple math, we would be somewhere close to 200 to 250 crore EBITDA in the next 2-3 years.
Take outer limit of that.
So if you were to take 160,000 and say, okay, you know, let's call it 13, 14, whatever rupees a kg. If you call it 15, it becomes 2,40,000. A little less than that, yeah, probably, yeah, something about 200, something like that.
200 plus crores, kind of like that. And debt on the balance sheet today?
The total,
net about 220 crores.
220 crores. and gradually this will this remain here or we see this coming down over?
So what we see is, see, because of revenue growth we see working capital
enhancing
will get increased, but as we pay down our term loan debt, term debt, I think it should remain relatively stable. I don't see it going up substantially. I also don't see it coming down substantially. It should be something in that range. Yeah. Right?
And what is our working capital cycle? Net working. And it will remain in this range?
Yes.
I mean, despite exports becoming a larger proportion of revenues, this will remain in this range?
Well, they manage numbers better.
Okay. Because exports will be higher receivable,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And inventory, at this time, inventory would be high?
No, in terms of number of days, it's about 60 days.
Okay. And if we do in exports, we do realization of say 180, 185. Domestic, we do 90.
But just keep in mind on that if this will, the realization will vary based
I understand. What realization would you call as this being a specialty product realization? How much would that be? I'm just trying to understand. So if a product is differentiated, specialty, how much would the realization be in comparison to averages?
I'd say at least 10 rupees more than some of the kind of
premium.
And how much would that, as a portion of revenues, how much would that be?
The portion of revenues?
Currently, it would be about 20%.
No, less than that. I mean, of course, if you group export into that also, yeah, but we're talking about that will grow, even though right now I would probably say that's only between 5-10% that I would consider high complexity, right? Ultra high complexity where we're able to get an extra 10-15 rupees. Some of those products are these new ones that we're making in the new plant, right? These type of products, right?
Okay.
Where, again, limited competition, there's no competition, right? I mean, we supplanted a Chinese supplier who was importing this into India. And we are now producing this domestically.
Oh. And so this is completely import replacement that we're doing? And are we seeing some tailwinds because the supply chains want to move away from China?
Yeah. We're looking at, there was actually one, so in India there's hardly any casting that's imported in from China, right? These were few of those. We've already gotten into the picture and, in the case of two customers, all of their Chinese imports have now stopped. In the case of one customer, we've developed two parts. They're under testing. Once the approval comes, they've got three parts. Once the approval comes for those three, got five more under development, and then the same will happen there also, right? So that's probably a 6 months, 1 year kind of a story there. Other than that, there's not much import into India from China that's happening anymore. Used to be very different 10 years ago. It's now changed, right? There's hardly any import of castings into India from China. Now, if you look at where we see the opportunities in the US market.
Mm-hmm.
So we are actually on the cusp of getting some new business that is currently manufactured in China, and the customer is looking at resourcing it from us.
Okay.
These are lower complexity parts.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had asked me 2 years ago, I would have said, you're getting it from China, why are you even bother asking us for a quote, right? Because I don't believe we would have been competitive. I don't believe anybody in India would have been competitive against China with the kind of prices they were offering. Obviously, there's two reasons that are driving this change. One, with the 25% tariffs that have been put in by Trump, which people thought, okay, Trump and Xi will figure out some deal and it'll be over soon. Didn't happen. Then they said, okay, a presidential election is coming. If Biden wins, he might remove it. That didn't happen either. So now people are looking at that as a long-term cost that's going to be there for a while. The second thing is reliability of China as a supplier for two reasons in this particular industry, right? One is, of course, geopolitical.
Mm-hmm.
I think people don't want to be as completely reliant on China for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and most recently, you can even see how the whole Shanghai situation has played out. The second one is specifically in our industry, there is a concern about China because decisions on the government level seem to be not as stable anymore. It's not as, you know, stable a trading partner anymore. In terms, you know, we saw last year one of the reasons why this commodity price hikes have happened so much in steel is because they went from being a exporter to saying, listen, now
we won't export.
We won't export, and you want to, and put basically export duties from having export incentives went to export duties, right? So there's one question of what if this product is in that. The other part is on the emissions and environmental front. There's a very unclear policy of what happens, because some of these industries, they just all of a sudden one day decide to shut them down, and they don't know when they're going to restart them. So they'll say, okay, put this equipment, put that equipment, then they have to go try to get it restarted. So that is actually the industry that's the company that's currently producing these parts is having one of those problems and has had those problems.
Okay.
So I think it's probably an overstatement or a bad generalization, but in my view, the reliability of China as a consistent trading partner, the way that it was for the last 30 years, I think has changed in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there are the way that the world views China geopolitically also has changed in the last 2 years compared to what it was in the last 30 years. So I think there is some discomfort, right, that I can certainly gauge that is also driving this change.
Business towards you.
And the other part of it is the tariffs that are there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, irrespective of whatever may have been geopolitical, blah, 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 at the end of the day, you're saving money, you go with that, right? And so this 25% seems to be tilting that balance also a little bit more. And U.S. domestically is struggling with capacity issues, with labor issues. A lot of people that have left the workforce are no longer going to come back. And this is not a very preferred industry for people to work in either. So I think people who had been working there for years continue working there. And now I think when COVID happened, there were some layoffs and all of that, and people found other things to do. So now when these guys are trying to get people back, they're not able to.
But we are not facing any of that, right?
When?
No employee stress or challenges?
Nothing abnormal. Nothing. Everything. We're not seeing any abnormality there.
Okay. 5 years out, where do we see the business?
Good question. I mean, I think we will see exports continue to grow. I think 5 years out, if I look at it, I think, globally, we will be a relevant player. I think what was heartening for me to see actually in, bit of a proud moment was there was this one, analysis report of casting industry in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And we were one of the names featured on that, even though we're not manufacturing there, and our, I think we're still early days for us to claim to be one of the top U.S. foundries supplying to the U.S. Right, but that, there was one of these reports that came out comparing all the different companies. Right, and, but I think we'll get there. I think one, I see the U.S. looking very strong for one because I think of the position that we're in, and the customers that we have, the capability that we have, and also the local issues that are there. There's not really been much investment there. Now they're suffering with labor issues. Second is, I think Europe, there's a great amount of potential that we'll unlock in the next 5 years. I think Europe is directionally, geopolitically going to move away from Russian gas. That is going to drive up energy prices. I'm not talking about today's shock energy prices, right? But I am talking about long-term, steady-state energy prices in 5 years will be higher than what they were, pre-COVID, undoubtedly, in my view, right? Because Europe does need to invest in their own energy that doesn't depend on Russian gas, right? It was easy for them to just push off all those investments because of cost, right? They could just push that off because they had all this cheap Russian gas coming. Today, their inability to pressurize Putin is because they need him as much as
he needs them.
As he needs them, right? And maybe to some degree a little bit more. So they are going to work on that, right? And they have announced, made announcement, but that is going to drive up cost of energy. So I think Europe will also become a very, very important business. So I think we'll have a good diversified global mix across. The other thing that I see happening domestically is I think we have several customers that do want us to come and set up plants closer to them. They would like us to be at their doorstep. couple of things. One, obviously, logistic cost advantage. Mm-hmm. But the second part of it is also, you know, the flexibility that they get, because they don't have to wait, you know, tell us, oh, you know, our production plan changed, you know, can you make this one instead of that one? And there's this whole pipeline of those parts and all these things. Right? So they would like to have that flexibility as well. So I think that is a potential that I could see 5 years from now, that we would have, you know, plants located, you know, several plants being closer to the customers, or where we have at least clusters of customers.
Today, how many plants do we have?
Three plants. All in the south, between 40 kilometers north of Chennai and 140 kilometers north of Chennai.
And what will be an optimal capacity to set up a new facility?
So, you can set up a variety of these things.
Yeah.
You could set it up for as low, I would say, as perhaps, you know, 2,000 tons a month. And as high as probably, you know, 6,000 tons a month. Something in that range seems to be, you know, where capacities are optimal to set up. So then it all comes down to, when you set up something at 2,000 tons per month, how do you manage overhead costs, right? In terms of the kind of systems and leadership team and people that you need to have.
Mm.
And that's something that we're already working on, seeing how we can do that.
And ownership, we own what, 72, 73?
Right now it's 74.8 something.
74.8. And that's split between you and your sister?
Yeah.
And she's not in the business.
So she's actually supporting us now in the US and managing that entire customer relationship and all other operations.
Okay.
So she has been doing this, I think, since 2019, I'm tempted to say maybe late 2018.
Okay.
I requested her support and she's been doing that since then.
That's nice.
So she lives there in the US, so it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
And I would actually credit some of most of this export growth that we're seeing now, a good chunk of it, to the kind of relationships that she's built with the, not only the management team, but also the operating teams there.
And right? She must be speaking the same language and everything, you know,
exactly.
Lifestyle and, you know, talking about baseball and all that.
Yeah. But more, so with one of the plants, right, the probably one of our biggest customers in the U.S., their plant, the Dana plant in Kentucky, she's got a weekly call set up with the operating team, right, the guy who's the buyer, the materials manager.
You can't get comfort like that
from...
I mean, from anyone.
Yeah. So she's got a weekly call with them, and so she told them that, hey, you know, your purchasing guys, you know, have decided to source this product also from us, which they're buying from another foundry in the U.S. currently, and the buyer says, great. So when, how quickly can you get me parts? Because I don't want to keep fighting with that supplier to keep getting parts, right? So because of that, also, I think when COVID and all these disruptions happened, we never created a problem for any of our customers. We managed to keep them fed through all the volatility that happened, right? Whether it was the slowdown or the sudden ramp up, all of that. And the question always used to be, is an overseas supplier as reliable as a domestic supplier who's next to you? And I think we've been able to answer that by saying that it's the other way around. I think, you know, us being, despite being overseas, have been over the last 2 years much more responsive and consistent, and you know, have not been an issue for them for the last couple of years, right? Which I think is a little counterintuitive. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You would always think that somebody next door to you would be more reliable and flexible than somebody far away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've proven in the last 2 years that it's been the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Well, great, this is very helpful. Our market cap is 1,000 just now?
No, it's actually, I think, obviously recently it's taken a little bit of hit. I think it's something in the 600 range right now.
Yeah, last I saw it was 1,000 maybe sometime back. So, yeah, market has been very volatile, of course. So. Okay. And total net worth is?
430 crores.
And last year's profit was?
PAT was about 14 crores.
14. And PBIT?
PBIT interest about 22 crores. Okay. Tax PBIT profit
about 23. EBITDA was 67.5.
Yeah.
67.
Minus depreciation of about 22. So about
45.
45.
So our ROE is, as we stand, are 10% odd, ROCEs.
Below, I think last year was it about 6% odd, 7% last year.
Where can we take these to? Where will these peak out? So,
so I think if it plays out over the next 3 years or so, that we think, definitely I think high teens to 20 seems to be very much in the realm of possibility of how it could play out. But again, you know, that depends on the government not coming up with some something new and weird, which I hope will not happen. Right? I mean, we didn't obviously see the axle load norm change happening, and that unfortunately set us back 3 years.
No intention of building a business in defense.
So we're supplying to customers where the end product does go into defense, but we don't have anything directly with the defense ministry. So we do produce, so if you see that forward lift carrier, rear lift carrier, so when, you know, the multi-barrel rocket launcher for which Ashok Leyland supplies the truck, and I think it's Saab that's got the rocket launcher behind it. So we're supplying those two components on that vehicle also. That goes to customer AxleTech, which got acquired by Meritor a couple of years ago. So we supply this to them, and then they build out the axle and they supply it to Leyland. And then, of course, Leyland does that integration. I think it's with Saab and some other guys that they're working together on, put that whole thing together and supply it to the industry. There's a few brackets.
How big is this as a proportion of revenue? Small.
Quite small.
So I see defense becoming a very big market. So I don't know how you can leverage it, or whether there is something that you can do in that segment, but this will really explode in terms of opportunity within the country.
So defense also, I think one of the things is typically produce a sample, it's a couple of years, you know, approval process, and then again, since it is, you know, limited quantities of what they order, right? So the, you know, it can be like a little bit of a cherry on top kind of thing. I don't really see it kind of being that baseload. Even if it develops out really well over the next 10 years, I don't see it being a baseload business. I think it can just be that little bit of cherry or little bit of icing right on the top.
I think this is very helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to meet you again.
Good to see you again.
Can I have your card? I don't have your number.
Okay. I just quickly ran out of my last one before you walked in.
Really?
Can I give you my phone number?
Yeah, please.
So 988.
Yes.
41.
Yes.
44.
Yes.
3.
Yes.
44. Deepak. If I have one in my wallet, maybe. I guess my...
No, this is good enough. At least, you know, I can maybe message you and take your views.
Sure. Part. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, every once in a while, I've got a few people in the investment community who shoot me an email saying, or a WhatsApp message saying, hey, Ashok Leyland is saying it's going to grow at 20%. Do you really think it's going to happen? Or, you know, and sometimes it's also information I get from
the
investment.
Yesterday I was meeting Subros, and we were talking about commentary that Maruti just gave to its dealers, and they said apparently that we'll grow 20% volumes this year. And he said, how did you get to know about this? And it's just that we keep hearing from, you know, various channels, and this we heard from the distributors.
Yeah.
And so he said, yeah, that's true. We heard about it.
I mean, so some of these things, right? Like, for example, when Tata Motors came out just a few weeks ago and said we're going to grow 20%, I had somebody reach out to me and ask me, what does it look like, right? What is your view? And I said, listen, typically what we see is sequentially from Q4 to Q1, we typically see a dip of about 25%.
Mm-hmm.
This year we're seeing it be flat to increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I would buy that commentary that it's 20%, right? And when they're talking to us,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're tongue in cheek saying 20%, but we think it could be more kind of thing, right? They're trying to be a little bit more upbeat and optimistic. Right? So, you know, Leyland has this thing they call the strategic supplier group.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about 33, 34 suppliers that they consider to be their most important strategic suppliers. And so they have a meeting with us twice a year,
mm-hmm.
right, as a group, right?
Mm-hmm.
All 30 of us in the room at the same time with the thing. And they just had one a couple of weeks ago with Dheeraj Hinduja, as well as their Anuj, who's the, I guess, the president, and Sudhir, who's responsible, the head of purchasing. They were very, this thing, right? Their projection was at 18%,
mm-hmm.
right? But they're very tongue in cheek of saying, but we think it could go maybe even better than 25%, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're hearing, they're trying not to be very committal beyond 18%, because that's what they feel is, you know, they want to get held to, but there's optimism beyond that, right?
And why is that? Why would you say is that the case? Because is it that on ground rates are increasing, or
we're seeing freight rates go up?
Yeah,
we actually had a situation this month where a couple of the carriers refused to take freight from our plant to Jamshedpur because of the price.
Oh.
They wanted an upward revision price, so we actually had to get the guys from Tata to call them up and say, listen, you'll get compensated on the price. We'll compensate Nelkas will compensate you on the price. So please take this material, right? And that is the kind of situation that happened in this last month itself, right? So that's, we're seeing freight rates go up, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of it is, of course, related to diesel costs,
mm-hmm.
but I think we're going to see it go up a little bit more beyond just the fuel part. I think
mm-hmm.
we will start to see realizations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because realizations matter a lot more now. Because what happened in, you know, this axle load norm in 2018, why we took that hit, right? The government's intention may have been good, but unfortunately the way that it played out was the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What I believe the intention was,
mm-hmm.
is they came in and said, they started to crack down on overloading.
Mm-hmm.
So all the transporters basically made money on overloading,
mm-hmm.
right? So they would take on a per ton basis, etc., and they would put more in that vehicle and make money.
Mm-hmm.
The transporters went to the government and said, if you're going to crack down on overloading, we're losing money, all this, these problems are there. So the government said, okay, anyway, the vehicles are designed for overloading. So there's 20% more that you can carry on the same axle, right? So we're going to make it, we're going to let you overload 20% legally.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, we'll hold you accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So the objective was to say, okay, transporters will make a little more. But what happened indirectly as a result of that, even guys who are not overloading because they don't want to be on the wrong side of the law, right? For us, we would never overload a truck. We don't. The last thing we want is one of our trucks to get seized at a checkpost and have to deal with that. We would never do that, right? Because we would never do that earlier. Now we can, 20% legally, right? So if you had the ability to overload it, so the all of a sudden the capacity shot up of what was already on the road. The second thing that happened is with GST coming in and getting more streamlined, the turnaround times also started to get slightly better. I think these two factors added capacity into the market existing, which crashed the freight rates.
Mm.
So in 2019, we saw a huge drop in freight rates that happened, which was the exact opposite intent of the government. Right? That was not the intent why they brought this in. And the transporters were the ones who they brought in for benefit and suffered as a result. But you know, so then that excess capacity has to get absorbed. Unfortunately, GDP growth
wasn't
so this way. So now with things that capacity, I believe, is now getting absorbed. We saw the first signs of this in November of last year, where I was reading that the price of a second-hand truck started to go up. So that was the first indicator, I would say, that I saw in this particular cycle, to say that, okay, for second-hand trucks, people are now trying to buy second-hand vehicles, as opposed to earlier, there was so much capacity, people who didn't know what to do with the vehicles they had. So then, other than that, when we introduced BS6 emission norm in 2020, the cost of the vehicle has gone up. right? About 10-15% because of all this other after treatment that had to be done.
Mm.
So now that the cost of the vehicle has gone up, your realization of your freight is lower.
Mm.
So at some point, this realization has to hit a tipping point.
Mm.
And once it hits that tipping point, then it's a completely different story, right? Mm. Then everybody who was postponing their purchases, expecting and trying not replacing old vehicles.
Mm.
At the average age of the vehicle, I believe, has gone up by a couple of years.
Mm.
So everybody who was postponing their purchases and not buying new vehicles, because a lot of the guys who buy new vehicles sell their vehicle after 4 years.
Mm.
They kept holding on to them for 5-6 years.
But right? Now is the time when they...
Now they will do that, right? Once it hits that equilibrium point. Mm. I don't know if we are at that equilibrium point yet, but I believe we're pretty close.
No, because if Leyland is sounding the way it is, then maybe we are close to that point.
So that is the part on haulage. In terms of the tippers and those vehicles, it's all about infrastructure. Right? So
do you supply to ACE as well? Action Construction?
No, we don't.
We don't. Very helpful. Thank you so much, Deepak. Such a pleasure. Such a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. So you're back today?
Yeah, we're actually going to go to the airport right now. I think when he stepped over to that side, he was just asking the driver to come to the lobby to pick us up.
What time is the flight?
7:40.
Okay, you're cut to cut because... this will be peak traffic time.
Yeah, so hopefully we can get there. I think within an hour. I don't think it should take longer.
Not longer than that.
At least from the few past experiences of going from here to the airport.
But Chennai must be very hot just now, right?
Yeah, it got a little bit better in May when we got a few showers.
Uh-huh.
Surprised because April was horrendous, and then we got a little bit of showers in early mid-May. It got a little bit better, and now of course it's gotten hot again. I think when we get a few showers in the next couple of weeks, we should start to cool down again.
How is the business environment with Stalin being in touch?
I think nobody is complaining. I think people seem to be relatively happy.
Really? Because they must be. There is this thing about pay us and get things done. At least things get done.
So the actually I was at one of our suppliers facility in Andhra yesterday, and the talk going around
is on.
Oh, maybe.
You want to switch this off?
So then the